You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage. We seek to help you relate well so you can live well in all aspects of your life.
Welcome to the show that will change your life for the rest of your life. This is Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks, and I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage. And this is a show that's going to help you connect and communicate better with everyone around you, because when we learn to communicate better with one another, we stand in our power, and we ultimately become a better spouse, a better parent, a better employee or employer, and basically, we just become a better human being, the one that God intended us to be all along. And this is why Relate Well was created with Dr. Rick Marks. He has a true passion to continually help others become the best version of themselves when relating to each other. Also known as Dr. Rick, that's how most everyone knows you. Welcome to the show this evening.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Always good to be in your presence. And there, Colby over there on the other side of the board here.
She lights up the room.
She does, doesn't she?
And the board. She takes care of the board. She lights that
all
up, too.
All the changes going on in her personal life, just making her blossom, right?
And newly engaged. So exciting for her. I think we might be more excited than she is.
I know.
Love is in the air right now. All right. Well, let's go into the first part of our program.
All right.
Which is always my favorite. And it's questions that are off the cuff. You've never heard these. You don't know what's coming out of your mouth. We have no idea what's on the way.
Right.
I know the questions and I deliver them, and you
have
the floor.
I just answer based on how I hear them.
I like it. Okay. Well, so we're going to start with the first one, and this is from Sanchez. Sanchez is in Plant City, Florida, and Sanchez says, my mom and I have a strained relationship over getting vaccinated for COVID. This is probably really common, I think, in a lot of people's lives. But she says she got the vaccination, and she's guilting me and my family to get it too. I don't want COVID, and I don't want the vaccine, and I'm not going to get vaccinated. So how can we resolve the issue of preference?
You can't.
Okay.
That's like rock music versus country music. I don't like opera, never will. Don't try and get me to. Got it. That's just the way it is.
And
I put this in the same category. Let's be honest, there are political differences behind this thing. There are medical differences. I mean, I told my doctor, I said, look, if you guys are honest, there are people who are just as educated as Fauci in the same field saying the opposite of what he says. And people like me out here in the general public who don't know, here, you guys can't even agree on this thing. So what makes you think the rest of us will, right? We don't know. And so because there's so much information, misinformation, theories, et cetera, it's going to come down to preference. If you want to get it, go get it. Get your shot. Do what you got to do. But don't impose that on someone else. That'd be like someone trying to impose opera on me. It ain't going to happen. I'm not going to listen to opera. I don't care what you say, right? Unless you tie me down, chain me to a table, and put a headset on my head where I have to do it. I have
nothing, not listening.
I'll still rebel inside my head, yeah. I'll think about, a Blake Shelton song or something, right? This is God's country, Uh-huh. I'll do that. And so what it comes down to is not about preference. It's really about respect. It's about respecting preferences.
When you take it
out of the context of is it the vaccine or not, it's really about, it's about the preferences. No, it's about respecting each other's preferences. And when you respect that Rick Marks doesn't like opera, then you don't force it on him. If you respect that she agrees in the vaccine and she can respect that he does not, then out of respect for each other's differences, just honor the difference and keep your opinion to yourself.
But isn't that difficult? I'm playing devil's advocate here for Sanchez. Isn't that maybe her mom thinking the way that the daughter is thinking is imposing on her health and her personal space, the mom?
It could be, unless then mom could say, well, listen, if you don't want to get it, then when you come to the house, what I would ask you to do is wear a mask when you're in my house or when you're around me. I'm not going to do that. Well, then don't go to her house out of respect for your mom. That's real simple. Look, someone called me here not too long ago around this whole COVID thing, and we're not for wearing masks. We're not for masks. We're not. And they give me all the reasons why. And I go, you know what? I probably agreed about 80% of what you're saying. I said, but here's where I differ. What you're saying is I don't agree with masks. Well, I'm going to wear a mask nowhere. And I go, I don't have that same philosophy. If I go into a Walmart or that restaurant and that store says, hey, we want you to wear a mask out of respect for that store and those people who own the store and that's their property, wear the mask. Wear the mask. Why? Out of respect for them. If you don't want to wear the mask, don't go in their store. Go find a store that will tell you you don't have to wear one. To me, it comes back to respecting those differences, you know? And so, you know, I look at a place like, I got to wear a mask in there. Ah. But I do it anyway with goodwill. Why? Because it's not my store. It's theirs. And if I want to go in there, they've asked me to, I'll do that for them. Why? It's respect. And when we come back to, when we move everything back to respecting things, I think we'll get along a lot better with each other. And we won't be pushing differences like this. We're respecting differences, mm-hmm. you yeah. see. Yeah. But I know families right now who are being torn apart relationally because of the philosophy behind this vaccine and the fear that it creates. But at the same time, I dealt with a family up in Wisconsin a couple weeks ago where the family's being destroyed just because of Republican versus Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The views. I mean, it's destroying the family. And I'm thinking what's really sad here is y'all can't have a relationship and just agree to disagree and keep politics out of it. It's got to the point where one group is basically, no, you're wrong, and you're a hater, and you have to agree with us. I'm like, we're not going to.
Yeah.
And it's a disrespect issue.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day. I actually had a luncheon and then a dinner the same day, and the luncheon, everyone ended up in a political discussion. The dinner party ends up in a political discussion. There's always that one person that brings it up, and then it's just the fire starter for everyone else.
Yeah.
It's all, I mean, no matter what, it seems like where you go right now, it's something political or yeah. stemming from politics. So the mask or vaccine or whatever it is, it's always something. But back to the mask issue, is it not an issue for people feeling controlled by the business, by the government, is it not a control issue? The ones that are pushing back, I guess I would say.
I would say that Walmart doesn't control me. But when I walk into their store, I am on their property. That ain't my property. That okay. belongs to them. That would be like a Walmart employee coming to my house and say, well, I want to not wear whatever in your house. Like, no, this is my house. Well, what makes the difference between my store and your house?
Mm-hmm, right.
You don't live here.
Right.
We let you come in here and shop because we're transacting business. But ultimately, it's our store. I go, respect it, folks.
Yeah,
just
makes
respect
sense.
It.
Okay, makes sense.
You
yeah.
see?
Uh-huh.
It's not about control. Now, where it becomes controlling is Walmart says, oh, by the way, you have to wear a mask when you're in our store. And on our parking lot, and in your car when you drive away, and we also insist that you wear it when you drive downtown to Jacksonville. I'm going to go one more and go, mm-hmm. Once I walk off your property, I do what I want to do. But when I put myself on your property, well, come on.
Have to abide by the rules.
I abide by the rules.
It's school or work or anywhere else. You have rules.
It's also yeah. like the U.S. Capitol, right?
Yes, that's
it's like,
absolutely
it's like,
true.
There's rules
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You abide by them or not.
I have rules at my house. You have to take your shoes off before you come in.
Yeah.
And so many of my friends push back on that and make fun of me. And I went to school for nursing, and I know too many germs that are out there. And germs are carried on your shoes whenever you're traveling around. And then you come to my house after you've shopped around the mall or wherever you've been. And then you come into my house, take your shoes off at the door.
Yeah.
I don't want those things tracked through my house, and I walk barefoot. My dogs are there. I mean, I don't want that in my bed.
It's
I don't want that
home.
Anywhere. So
exactly
those
right.
are my rules. Shoes.
Exactly.
I remember
watching the whole the Capitol thing where one person who's in the Capitol who was interviewed, he said, this is not their house. This is the people's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my wife and go, but what he's missing is that may be true in a political worldview, but in the end, you don't walk in there 24/7, do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a place it may be a people's house, but you don't get free reign of it.
Yeah, that's true.
What makes you think you're free and able today? Because it's the people's house? No, sir. You're disrespecting the rules.
All right. Well, there's the answer, Sanchez. It's just basically respect your mom's views. Your mom needs to respect yours.
And you have to agree to disagree.
And agree to disagree and wear your mask. If mom wants to feel protected from COVID, then wear your mask.
Exactly.
And the kids
right.
wear the mask and your husband, you know. Okay, let's move on to one more quick question. And this is from Carmen in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm 36 and dating. I have always been told not to discuss your past relationships with who you're dating too soon. And really should keep your conversations regarding your ex to a minimum. So every time I say anything about my past, my boyfriend gets visibly agitated and we inevitably end up in a nasty fight. Why is this happening?
I can only speculate, but here's what it sounds like. She hasn't resolved the issues from the prior relationship and it's leaking out into this relationship. And this guy is realizing the more you keep talking about your past, you're not present with me, which means you still have a foot or an umbilical cord tied back to that person. And because you have an emotional umbilical cord, you had an emotional umbilical cord tied to that person, you're really not tied to me. And he knows it. He can feel it. He can sense it.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, that's well said. There we go. Cut the umbilical cord and get it done.
Well, this is why, this is one of the reasons why second marriages divorce at a higher rate. Uh-huh. Third marriages divorce at a higher rate because you're not resolving the issues from the prior relationship. You keep bringing them to the next one.
Ah, there you go. You got to cut that cord and move on.
Exactly.
All right. Well, speaking of moving on, we are going to move into another segment in a moment. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. And you are listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. We'll be back.
People are like chameleons. As we change, we must adapt to ensure healthy, balanced relationships. The hallmarks of a healthy relationship are goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. Relate Well teaches these core skills and gives you practical applications for a healthy, loving, and caring relationship with each other. Whether you're single, dating, or married, taught by Dr. Rick Marks, licensed counselor, clinical fellow, and marriage and family therapist, the Relate Well Core Program features 9 online sessions, including an interactive PDF of the course manual. Millions of people look for the perfect match to share their life through improved and loving connections with the Relate Well Core Program. Call or visit RelateWell.us.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, and we just tackled a few listener questions in our last segment, which is always really fun. And that was on COVID vaccinations, which I think every family seems to have an issue with right now. Somebody in the family, I got vaccinated. Did you? It's the topic of every conversation right now in every family.
And the thing about what I want our listeners to understand is I don't take a side. Because you're not going to win in those arguments. You're not going to win about whether I like opera or not. I promise you're not going to win. What you have to do is just step back and respect the differences and make decisions out of respect.
Right.
But once it becomes into I'm right and you're wrong, I'm like, well,
then
I'll
it's
tell
an
you
escalating
what.
Argument that no I one's going to win.
I would say, no, you're wrong. Opera is not great. And they're going to go, well, you're wrong. Opera is great.
One wins that. Not,
and nobody
wins. There's no us in that relationship.
Exactly. Because it's not right or wrong. It's just the differences, right?
Yeah.
Respect the differences.
Yep, that's exactly. Respect difference and move on. Move forward. All right. Well, let's move forward into an interesting article that was written by The Atlantic. And this article was, I don't know where I stand on it, so maybe you can unfold a little bit more of information that we need. It was saying that relationship happiness and satisfaction can be predicted by your previous number of sexual partners.
Let's get rid of the word predict.
Okay.
It's not so much predicting as much as it is correlates. All right.
Okay.
Prediction means cause and effect. Right.
Got it.
And they will. The article does indicate that we're not saying this does do that. We are saying there is a strong correlation that the more sexual partners you have prior to marriage, the research is showing and suggesting that you will have lower marital satisfaction down the road. Those who have fewer sexual partners, usually 3 or less for women, I think historically 3 or less for women before marriage, 6 or more for men before marriage, I think with some of the early data from the 1980s, was that the fewer partners, the greater the likelihood of relational marital satisfaction down the road. And I thought that was really interesting. It was Dr. Brad Wilcox out of University of Virginia. He's a friend, but also one of the leading researchers today. Scott Stanley out of University of Denver, folks like that. Brad is quoted in this article, which drew me to it, because you're talking about The Atlantic, and Brad is a strong conservative. He's a Christian, Catholic Christian, a wonderful man, pro-marriage, pro-family, but also a very balanced researcher around marital health, what it takes, et cetera, et cetera. Here's a quote in the article from him that I thought was interesting. It says here, contrary to conventional wisdom, when it comes to sex, less experience is better, at least for the marriage, said W. Bradford Wilcox, a sociologist and senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies. And he's also an Atlantic contributor, right? And then Nick Wolfinger. Nick is also another one of the big researchers, and actually he's the one kind of the key focus of this article. It said here, Wolfinger found that women with zero or one previous sex partners before marriage were least likely to divorce, while those with 10 or more were more likely to divorce. And the idea here is that fewer sex partners you had, that's a form of divorce proofing your marriage.
Why is that? Because you don't know anything different. You don't know what you're missing. You don't compare.
All those are pieces of the puzzle.
All
those are pieces of the puzzle. You know, you can look at it through a Christian prism, because I know a lot of Christians talk about whenever you engage in sexual engagement with someone, you give a part of your soul away, in a sense that you give a – because there's a level of yourself that you just give away to somebody. In one sense, biologically, that's true, because when that bond is created, there's an emotional connection that creates. And then when that thing rips apart, boom. It's like oxytocin, which is a neurochemical that bonds people. Oxytocin creates bonding. But we also know that if you bond to too many people, right, you have sex with a lot of people, oxytocin is released. Then when each of those relationships break up, what that person's brain has learned is bond, not bond.
Oh, my goodness.
So the brain learned that sex is no longer for bonding, because in marriage, particularly from a Christian worldview, a healthy sexual relationship is an expression of a healthy, loving relationship, right? It's an outgrowth of the deep sense of usness. But the more sexual partners you've had and breakups you have, you're actually training your brain not to bond or attach over time.
Wow.
It makes it harder to bond and attach in healthy ways. It learns, it confuses.
It's almost like a pornography or something. Does that make sense?
Very much so. Very much so. You could mirror it that way. Very much so. Because addictions are attachment disorders. You're mm-hmm. bonding to an object or a process, you see. And so there is some other research outside of this article that points out the more that you have the sexual partners, you're confusing the brain's ability to bond and attach at the biological level. And that thing, I think that's...
This is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why you find a lot of people...
Not anything... I mean, I've never heard this before.
Well...
And I don't want to, I guess, gender specific this, but men typically have many partners.
Typically, research shows they have more than women.
And women not so much. So then does that mean men don't bond as well? Because it's almost like a barrier, wall? What is that? Does that mean anything?
I would refer back to Jim Talley's book, Too Close, Too Soon, where he talks about the progression of relationships between men and women. And the core relationship from an acquaintance stage to a close friendship. Men and women gender go through the same process. But women, to that point, tend to move to the emotional connection. Men move to the physical at that point. All right? And then they both get to know each other more, so the intellectual. But men will move to the emotional later than the woman does. She moves to the
longer.
Physical, right? Mm-hmm. She moves to the physical part, the sexual part, but as she goes through the emotions. The guy moves to the physical before he moves to the emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So from a gender standpoint, that's why a guy, like a kid in high school, can have sex with his girlfriend, break up, it not mean much to him. because he never went to the emotional stage. She went to the emotional stage to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
And it's confusing. And I think we understand these biological differences, how God put us, made us, then we understand why the scriptures teach the way they teach in terms of how do you set up and have healthy relationships, right? Those kinds of things. As a matter of fact, I sent the article to some colleagues of mine who are pastors. I think it was Christianity Today or Christian Post just cited some data that 49% of evangelical singles now believe cohabitation prior to marriage is okay and consistent with Scripture. And they're going to do it regardless of what the church teaches. So now 50% of Christian singles are going, hey, we're going to move in and we're going to live together regardless. No commitment. No marriage. And we've got a whole nother cultural mindset. And this article talks about part of that mindset shift and that how that mindset shift has affected sex long term. I read another article where you're actually seeing a decrease in sexual activity among this current generation.
Mm-hmm.
That the differences in sex, polyamory, throupling, I mean, all the different things we have today, right? All the freedom in sex has not actually increased sex for this current generation. This current generation is going less towards it, which I found interesting.
Yeah, that's going to change the world.
It's
going to change everything.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And another interesting, which kind of parallels in a different way, Brad released the data or supported the data, reinforced the validity of the data in a Twitter response. For the first time ever, there are more 80-year-old plus alive than there are birthed two-year-olds. We are not reproducing ourselves as a nation. And so we've gone the way of Europe. Europe is not reproducing. They're getting older. They're not producing young children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that because of the lack of sex today? I don't think so. I do believe it's because there's a lack of desire for having children.
Okay.
I see. The lack of desire to have a family today. It's more about self and sex, sexual expression.
Okay.
This article is really about, though, if you want to have a healthier marriage, there's that which suggests maybe being a virgin or having very few sex part of prior marriage is a very healthy thing for your marriage long term.
Okay. And there was many other things that it was talking about too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we need to tackle the being critical of your partner. It's creating a critical environment. So you're being critical of your partner because you've had so many previous partners. So I think we need to tackle that.
The idea that because one partner's had so many and that partner criticizes them?
No, not criticizing them, but thinking critically because let's say ex-partner, he's had 10 previous partners,
mm-hmm.
and now he's with Sally,
mm-hmm.
and so he's extra critical of Sally because he's had 10 other women in his life. And so, you know, then he's going to be more critical of Sally because he's seen and done who knows what.
And he can criticize her in bed. He can criticize her as a person. He has all these other experiences to judge her by.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem.
Or he doesn't have to say it out loud.
Oh, no, it's all in
his head. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he can be married to Sally and they could be in a period of making love, but he may be thinking about Joanne and, you know, Sally and or other people in the past,
mm-hmm.
measuring, comparing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a real sense of if you haven't had a lot, you've got nothing to compare it to.
Right.
Right?
That's what, yeah. That's
but if
exactly
you've had a lot, it's easy to compare someone to.
Yeah.
You also see this with adultery and you see this with pornography.
And I'm thinking always raising the bar. You know, you've had 10 partners. You've had this, that, the other, X, Y, Z. And it's that bar is always rising. Almost with pornography, it's always you need more, more, more.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Could be. I've worked with a couple where the husband has had over 100 women in the marriage, literally over 100.
In the marriage?
In the marriage. And so he's got a really broken childhood, I mean, that kind of stuff. But he has. And you can imagine what goes through her mind. What's wrong with me, right? And it really wasn't about her. It's about him, his sexual addiction, his own brokenness and woundedness. But her mind is going to play that out, right? Mm-hmm. And does he compare her to all those others? And what's wrong with me? That's going to be a natural outgrowth of something like that, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. I would definitely, I would do that. If someone had been with numerous partners before me, I would maybe feel inadequate, but I'm on the other end of the spectrum.
And I have,
so I would feel insecure about that.
And
yeah.
I've talked with many sexually addicted men over the last 25 years and doing counseling, and many of them have very openly shared, yeah, there are times when I'm with my wife and I'm thinking about someone else.
Mm, so that's typical.
Yeah, your brain is going to go there if it's not enjoyable here, because they're right. looking for that. They're looking for that rush, that experience. So I'm not getting it here. This is my wife. This is dull. Mm-hmm. I'll go think about somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think that it justifies scriptural teaching about self control in the area of sexuality prior to marriage, because there's data that's suggesting you want a really good marriage, you might want to follow this path. You know, the research data suggests it's actually good for you.
Yeah.
To follow biblical teachings.
Right. All right. Well, speaking of other teachings, you do have a book out there. And if you want to get Dr. Rick's book titled Relationships for Life, again, that's Relationships for Life. You can get it on Amazon.com or DrRickMarks.com. And you can learn all the fundamentals of healthy and loving relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we've got to take a quick break. You are listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. We'll be back in a moment.
Healthy, loving relationships are essential for a happy life. On Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage, you'll learn the principles for healthy, mature relationships. They share personal journeys, biblical and clinical insights that will challenge and inspire you to create fulfilling relationships in every aspect of life. Sundays at 5 p.m. on 97.1 The Truth and ilovethetruth.com. When we relate well, we will live well. And to live well, we must relate well.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. And I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host. And today we've had some really good conversations.
Yeah.
And we always have good conversations for sure. But this one's particularly interesting because it's about the number of sexual partners and how that predicts a healthy, long-lasting marriage and mm-hmm. relationship. And we were talking about the number of partners is a predictor. And the less number of partners that you have, that predicts a longer, healthier relationship, as opposed to those have, you know, had numerous, numerous relationships, that will decrease the happiness, if you will, in your relationship. So we had an article that was written by The Atlantic that we were tackling earlier, but mm-hmm. I also want to touch on a few other things. There was okay. less partners were definitely a big indicator. Mm-hmm. And then let's move on to four-year degree. That was important.
For marital satisfaction?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, the people who are marrying today are college educated.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are not marrying today are not college educated.
Hmm.
So the rise in single parenthood and in cohabitation is more in your high school or non-college educated. The people who are marrying are four-year degreed. All right. And so there is something in the culture right now that says those who are more college educated tend to be more committed to a long-term relationship and tend to will move that way. Those who are less educated, college culture research shows they tend more towards cohabitation, those kinds of things.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there was another thing about attending religious services.
Now, interesting, because lower sex partners, being a virgin before you get married, usually taught through what? Religion. Faith. Now, it does say that religion is not the cause of it, right? But they do believe it facilitates lower sex partners, all right?
Yeah, saving yourself from marriage.
Yeah, saving yourself from marriage, that kind of teaching versus the more cultural worldview, which was, hey, forget that, you know, free love, go do what you want, you know, from the 60s and on. So religiousness is a factor that contributes to lower sex drive. And sure, not sex drive, lower partners, right, or staying a virgin, all right? The only problem with that I have found is even in evangelical circles, you have a group that practices what they call courting, right? You don't touch, you get your parents' permission, and you know, it's very, very old school. I'm not against it, but it's a very, they're a smaller group within evangelicals, and you know, you don't do a lot of things. Like when Luella was dating the guy before me, they had these rules: we're not going to hold hands, we're not going to touch. I'm like, I'm sorry, I ain't that way, right? I'm sorry. You know, we may not have intercourse before we get married, but
definitely
I'm sorry.
PDA.
I'm holding my we're going to hold
definitely
hands.
Definitely public display of
yeah,
affection.
You know, okay. I'm sorry. I'm not there, right? Uh-huh. That's just not me. I'm okay with dating. I don't know if I want to court, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you have that rigidity there. And I think sometimes that rigidity also will play itself out relationally, which will affect relational marriage satisfaction. Because that rigidity usually comes from a religious legalism, a very legalistic view of religious expression, how you live out your truth, in a way that's so controlling in performance, and it doesn't allow your brain to be human. You
wow,
see,
yeah, that's,
and I think that kind of thinking goes along with that. Now, here's something that the data in didn't point out, which I do know to be true, though: couples that do follow that biblical plan, and this is interesting, I'm not here to advocate for or against it, but also understand that what is called natural family planning, that don't use contraception, they usually have big families, of course, their divorce rate is 0.1%.
Really?
Those families don't divorce. Because they understood God's design for marriage was not about my happiness, what is about deep love and connection, and now that connection, healthy sex grows, and that produces children.
Procreation.
For us to love others that come from us.
Right.
And they have a greater understanding of that marriage, the idea of the Trinity, and they tend to live that out, and their divorce rates are very, very low. That's why you see a lot of those families are very strong and healthy and connected.
Yeah, they are typically strong and healthy. Okay, and then talking about the last point was income over $78,000 a year was important.
Yeah, I can't speak to that one
okay.
too much. It was interesting. I'd have to dig more into it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, that's interesting.
That was their research?
That was interesting. You know, why that figure? I don't know.
Okay.
I told my wife, well, we have to increase our income.
Yeah,
then.
Right. We got to get to work. For you know, sure.
My only thoughts, maybe that's a number where people feel more safe and secure,
mm-hmm.
where they're not having to always survive, where they can actually begin to relate. I really don't know.
Okay. Well, so speaking of safe and secure, we're talking about sexual partners and having less is more. Less is better for a relationship.
For relationships long term. Yeah.
Marriage. And what if someone has already had, I don't know, numerous partners, and then say both sides or say one side, what do you do then?
Well,
how can you repair, I guess, the non-bonding damage that's been done into your new relationship to make it last?
One thing I enjoyed about the article was the article did indicate that the study needs to be replicated quite a few more times. So though the research is there, you want to see it peer-reviewed, you want to see more come out about it. So they published that, but they did make that little, you know, they stated that in there, which I appreciated that. I think, you know, a person who's had a lot of sexual partners before can change their heart and mind around relationships and sexuality and create a healthy, strong marriage.
Got it.
I don't think everything's 100%. I think there's always those people who want to do something different, and they do. They care enough to change, and they do. Real simple.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Well, let's now talk about soulmates.
Yes.
I want to get into the soulmate combo.
All right.
And I think you either stand in one position or you stand in another. It's almost very political, I guess, if you will, to talk about soulmates. I think you either truly believe your soulmate is out there, you married your soulmate, you're looking for your soulmate, or soulmates are nonsense. What are your thoughts on this? Because I think you would probably be passionate about that, too.
So the idea of a soulmate actually comes from an ancient tale of by I can't really pronounce the name Aristophanes. He was a comic playwright, and he was a contemporary of Plato. And he tells a story of this two-headed giant who basically got Zeus upset. So Zeus split him in half. Now they're two souls. And the idea of the soulmate is they're now looking to find each other for the rest of their life in order to feel complete and whole.
So then they were one to begin with.
And somehow they
divided.
Zeus split them up. And now they're got to find your soulmate because you're half a soul. All right.
Okay. It's a Jerry Maguire, you complete me moment.
That is one of the four re-understandings okay. of this idea. So there's right. four perspectives of the soulmate. One, all right. So one is that idea your soulmate's your perfect match, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's this one person out there, right? There's a million pennies laying on the ground and one of them has a pink X on it and you have to pick that one at the right time. It's a perfect match. And if you don't have that perfect match, right? Then that's not your soulmate. The problem with this kind of thinking of soulmate is it sets you up for failure because then you begin to find this person is a real person with thoughts and feelings against yours. You're different, right? Oh, no, we're not getting along. Well, you're not my what?
Soulmate.
We're not a perfect match. But I found this girl on Facebook, by the way, and we're really getting along. I feel it with her. So this one is all, it's about an emotional intensity that you feel it, right? And it's all driven by emotion. The only problem is these people who believe this way are finding a lot of different soulmates out there. Or they're always finding the wrong one, thinking they're finding the right one. You see? So that's one view of the idea of soulmate. Another view is that comes from a Yiddish word, beshert. And the idea here is that God decided before you were born who you're supposed to marry. Like, in other words, Colby had no decision in this guy. And you see, it was preordained. Before she was born, she had to find that guy, right? And so, thus, until she finds that guy, she'll never be what? Complete or whole. Which is that Jerry Maguire thinking, right?
Yes.
You know,
complete me moment
yes.
in the movie.
And most of us who... In our world at counseling, we go, no way.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Yeah. I'm surprised Renee Zellweger didn't just roll her eyes. Like, yeah, I've heard that before.
Oh, she probably did.
You know.
But on camera, she didn't.
Yeah. And so there's that view that somehow the soulmate was, and you see this a lot of time in the church, you know, God has that one out there for you. In other words, God's already, and we don't say that, God's already chose that one for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find that one. Well, if that's true, then I had to go to Florida and join the Navy. I never Florida to find mine. The problem with that thinking then would suggest also you couldn't find anyone else, that there was only one that was created before you. All right.
Okay.
The third one, and this comes from, I really like this because Diane Soley, who I know, and I would not be a lot of where I am at today had it not been for that lady. She was the founder of what's called the Smart Marriage Movement. It was national, actually, it's international. And she did so much for the cause of strengthening marriages and families across this country through education and skills-based educational models. I went to all of the annual Smart Marriage Happy Family conferences. I got to speak there every time, and she had me be a keynote speaker as well. Love Diane to this day. She actually lives here in the Jacksonville area, but she's retired and kind of gone away. But her thinking of a soulmate is that's a fellow traveler.
What do you mean by fellow traveler?
In other words, we all have a soulmate, like with your mom, your dad, your siblings. They're all a part of your soul, right? And so then I meet you, Angelia, right? And then we start to get to know each other and we get married. And over the years of our marriage, working things out, struggling together, loving each other, building the friendship, we are becoming soulmates always on the journey.
Oh, okay.
I like her view.
Yeah, I like that.
I like her view.
Yeah.
That soulmate
building up
is,
together.
It's a building up and working together mm-hmm. to become each other's soulmate, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what she says. And the last one is this idea that a soulmate is a person that shows up in your life and wakes you up. You know, just wakes you up to life
you
and
felt
everything.
Dead, yeah, now you're alive.
Yeah, and that to me that's almost feels too much. That number one, oh, I found my perfect one. I'm alive. I'm like, no. So I tend to go with the idea of there's not a soulmate. Mm-hmm. Or if I had to choose, I'd stick with Diane's. Because is the world my soulmate? Yes. But we've become that over time. Mm-hmm. Did I love her? Did she love me? Yes. Did we love well? No. You see? So we became each other's soulmate over time.
All right. Well, we've got a break right now. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt, but okay, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and continue the soulmate convo. I think this is quite interesting. We'll be back in a moment.
To have and to hold from this day forward. Your wedding day was the biggest commitment of your life. Relationships change over time. Needs go unmet. Communication breaks down. And half of all marriages end in divorce. If till death do us part has become a challenge, then it's time to reconcile and reconnect. In his 1 to 3 day marriage intensives, Dr. Rick Marks coaches couples in distress back to their love and hope for a future together. Dr. Rick's intensives is not traditional therapy. Marriage intensives give couples the skills for communication, problem solving, emotional regulation, as well as the skills for healthy bonding and much more. Intensives empower couples to create the marriage they desire with Dr. Rick's Relate Well principles and tools, keeping couples out of the divorce graveyard.
I realized many years ago with the team that I work with that if we could teach people those skills for bonding and reattachment and communication and problem solving and emotional regulation and much more, it gives you the hope again, which can lead to the goodness and the love and the feelings and the intimacy so that you win. Your usness, your marriage wins, and your kids win.
87% of the couples who participated in Dr. Rick's marriage intensives reconnected their love for each other and remained married.
If you want to take the opportunity, you have the will to do it, you want to do it, and you want to save it, we'll show you how.
Intensives are cheaper than a divorce and much more meaningful. Save your marriage, reconnect your love, save a generation, and secure your future. For more information, visit drrickmarks.com or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like we should just keep rolling during the break. That's when the good stuff comes out. Yeah. We think we've got the good stuff on air, but there's even better stuff off air. And we were talking about your relationship with Luella.
Yeah, and how it all started.
But the way you describe it almost sounds like a soulmate experience. When you first saw her walk across the room, you knew that was the woman you would marry.
I did, but she didn't. That's for sure.
But you felt she was your soulmate.
Yeah.
She was your mate for life.
Yeah.
So that's not your soulmate? You don't believe in soulmates when you have
that
experience?
Well, you could also say that with pheromones and her pheromones and mine connected together. You've heard that kind of thinking.
Yeah, but you didn't say, I'm going to date that girl, or you said, I'm going to marry that
woman. That's what I told my senior chief. So I found the girl I'm going to marry. I couldn't tell you why. I just knew it.
That's not just pheromones. I think there's a little more to that.
Well, I do too.
You're saying I'm going to marry that woman.
I do too, but we realized we became friends, but she did not want to date me for 2.5 years and even ignored me for 6 months, wouldn't talk to me, had nothing to do with me from January of 83 to June of 83, ignored me completely. And I found out later why, because beginning in January of 83, when she was in her prayer time, she started to have fears that she would be married to me by the end of the 83. And she didn't want to marry me, so she shut me out of her life for 6 months.
Wow.
And it was in June of 83 that God told me. Oh, she had a lot of baggage there. So God told me to call her one night in June. I hadn't talked to her in 6 months. Every time I saw her, she'd walk away. I went, oh, well, you know, it is what it is, right?
And
I was just started dating another girl.
So you can't say this is a soulmate situation? I mean, this is...
I don't know that I believe in soulmate myself. I don't.
Okay.
All right? I do believe that God put us together to become soulmates.
Oh. Well, that's a different way of looking at it, isn't it?
Yes. I tend to believe that the Lord put us together. But he could have done that with you and me and Colby, me and anyone else, right? He just chose her.
But he didn't. He chose her, and then the two of you grew together.
So think about it this way. Let's say she died before we got married. Does that mean I can never find my soulmate? Of course not.
Right.
You can become a soulmate with somebody else. You see, the idea of soulmate, if that person dies, well, then you're going to be single the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to settle for second best. That's not Father's plan.
What about those people that you, I mean, recently we've heard quite a bit of it in the hospital with COVID, and one spouse dies and within 60 seconds or 6 minutes or 18 minutes, the other one dies. Is that not a soulmate?
I would believe that that is too, well, if that's our definition of soulmate. So let me give you a definite, the problem with that is it leaves you to believe that all marriage is built on emotional intimacy, just emotion. Well, sometimes love doesn't feel love for me. Sometimes I don't feel love for her. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Being love is more than just a feeling. Right? The idea of Jerry Maguire we talked about earlier. It's a lot more than just that feeling. You know, I don't feel it with you. Well, that's okay. You can get the feelings back if you learn how to love well and treat people well. And of the four protectors of relationship, as we talked about, and relate well, goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. So I think you can, if you want to call that a soulmate, that's great. But that doesn't mean if Lola was to die today or if I was to die today, she couldn't find that same relationship on with someone else. It'd be different because they'd be a different person. But she could still find that same deep level of love and intimacy. You see, it would just be in a different way, different person. But she could find that same soul connection, if you will.
So can you find that same soul connection with anyone if you try? I mean, arranged marriages. I mean, can you make that happen if you're willing or wanting? Or I mean,
I think there still has to be some little chemistry there.
Okay. So there does have to be chemistry.
I think so.
In order to bond together, so. Not necessarily in soulmate, but emotionally.
You have to have a desire to. You have to have a love for that person and a desire to want to be with them.
Okay.
That is why couples who get pregnant out of wedlock, who marry for that reason, their divorce risk is like 89%. It is very, very high. Those marriages don't make it. Why? Because that night they had sex was not about love. It was about self-pleasuring. It's about themselves. All right? And they just happened to get pregnant. They never intended to get married. Marriage is not on their radar screen. And then someone comes along, society, their church, or guilt them, and says, y'all need to get married. Why? Well, two wrongs don't make a right. You just created, that's a potential divorce right there. Why? It was never intended to them. So when you marry someone, you've got to love them, and you got to see yourself being married to them. There's got to be a sense of that. If I can't see myself being married to you, then don't do it. You know? Just because, I always tell people, if you doubt it while you walk down the aisle, walking down the aisle and saying I do and kissing each other doesn't take the doubt away. You walked out with the doubt. The difference is you've got a legal commitment now, but with the state as well, because that document's been signed by that preacher and two witnesses. That's a legal document now. If you doubt it, don't do it.
I think that's what so many people do. They do walk down the aisle. There's so many issues, and they're doubting all the way down. And then, sure enough, those issues only grow. They don't get smaller. They just grow.
That's right.
I mean, without counseling, without talking to you first before marriage or during marriage, I mean, this is exactly what happens. It disintegrates.
There was a blog post.
Soulmate or not.
Yeah, there's a blog post, someone who was against it. It's truelovedates.com. This person wrote this regarding a soulmate. He said, it is a title that promotes feeling and energy that attracts one person to another. It's a dangerous concept because it fools you into believing that love and marriage hinge on emotional ecstasy. Interesting term. I think of the word intimacy, but he uses ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And even more detrimental is that it gets you to believe that you are incomplete until you come face to face with the love of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you think about it, the scripture says a husband who loves his wife loves himself. So, in other words, I have to have Luella in order to love myself. No. I have to learn to love myself so that I can love Luella. So the idea is I can't fully love myself until I have a soulmate in my life. You can love yourself without another person in your life. That's what our childhood is supposed to teach us.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy self-respect and self-confidence and self-esteem, right? To value ourselves as sons and daughters of the Lord. Why? so that my security is in my identity as a son or a daughter of the Lord, so that I can give to my relationship with you, Angelia, without taking from you to make up my my deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
You complete me. Why? Because I need you to make me feel better about me. Reality
I'm thinking
is
I'm thinking every show, though. I'm thinking every movie, every princess movie. You find your prince. You found your other counterpart. You're now whole.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie The Proposal with Sandra Bullock. I mean, all of these movies that we've watched over so many years.
Hollywood.
Yeah, this is what we've had ingrained in us. We are looking for that other part of us.
And 15 years later, the prince kicked Snow White out. She went back to live with seven little guys in the woods, and he married the princess next door.
Oh.
They didn't tell you that part of the story, did they?
I haven't seen that movie. What?
No, that's where did this come from? The part they didn't tell you about, right?
Yeah. That's part two that wasn't ever released.
Yep. Rapunzel's husband cut all her hair off and put her back in the prison. It's just, he's an abuser. But they don't tell you all these things. You see what I mean?
No, we aren't exposed to those. So then that taints our thought process for what we're looking for. And when we think we find it and we walk down the aisle with it and we don't feel whole.
You know what makes marriage so powerful is when you both love each other because you do, you've chosen to, and you desire in us and you work on things over the years that my thinking and her thinking don't become the same, but we know how each other think and feel because we've gotten to know each other so well. And there's such an emotional tie there that you become to realize that in this deep psychological inner part of yourself, I'm not me without Llewellyn. She's not me. I'm not me without Llewellyn. She's not me. And she's not her without me.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this sense of we are a one. And that whatever I do and think, it always considers her and I together. I can't see myself dying without her. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I see it that way. We are an us. I can't see myself living. Now, I know it could come. She could die before me or vice versa. I know it could happen. But I don't see that. I see us to that point. I don't see divorce as an option.
But that's soulmates. Your souls are intertwined.
Which is what
And I'm not a soulmate advocate.
Which is why that just sounds soulmate-ish. Yes. Which is what Diane Sully calls a soulmate. You become it on the journey of
over
life.
Time.
Yeah.
That was the traveler, right?
Yes.
So what was it?
Yeah,
the
traveler.
Traveler.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And she, I really traveler. Believe that she is so right about that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she's so right about it. She took away all this mythical and religious aspect of it and go, actually, it's about living life in a such a way you love each other with wholeness and goodness, and you become it together over time.
And tell me this. Do you think that you can find that again? God forbid something happens to you. Luella tries to find someone again, or vice versa. You try to find someone again. Can you find that again?
Yes.
Or will it take 40 years to develop that? And
I have a young lady that I know. It's the daughter of one of my neighbors. Her husband died. And they had a son. And my wife ends up bumping into this guy at Home Depot. She's trying to figure out colors. And this guy is talking to the person at Home Depot. And she could tell he knows what he's doing. Turns out he's a contractor. So they get to talking. And she's impressed with this young man, right? His name's Issa. She invites Issa to our house to help us repair something because he has. So while she's out in the front yard talking with Issa about some things we want done, someone calls Leah and says, "Hey, Leah, Issa is in the front yard of your neighbors. We're your parents' house." Leah had me at her parents' house. She walks out. They were in high school together.
Ah.
He always had the hots for her. So anyways, they rekindled their friendship. They started dating. He waited until the son could really embrace him as a dad. And I officiated their marriage about 2.5-3 years ago. And they've had two sons since then. So she has an excellent, phenomenal relationship with one of the finest young men you'll ever see. He's just that good of a guy.
I love it.
He's that good of a guy.
Oh. good story and good ending. I like that. And whether you believe in destiny or you believe in soulmates or just your
creating
your
it over time.
Yeah, just finding your person. Whatever it is, just keep searching for it, and it will happen.
And then you go work on it together using the principles in Scripture to create the essence that God wants you to have.
Absolutely. Through the Relate Well program.
I even advocate better. That even better. You're right.
All right. And if you would like to learn to live a life through all four protectors in all of your relationships, and learn how to develop the tools that create us in your marriage, us in your family, or even us in the workplace, then register for the online Relate Well Core program. You can register for Relate Well as a single or couples, and just register online today at relatewell.us. And if you're looking for private relationship counseling or life coaching from Dr. Rick himself, then call 904-724-8683. That's 904-724-8683. Well, this has been another informative show from Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks to help you live your best life. And remember, until next week, relate well to live well.
We want to invite you to visit relatewell.us. Whether you're single or a couple, come learn what a healthy relationship looks like and then put it into practice. For relationship counseling, contact Dr. Rick at relatewell.us.
You were the Word at the beginning, one with God, the Lord Most High. Your hidden glory in creation, now revealed in you, our Christ. What a beautiful name it is. What a beautiful name it is. The name of Jesus Christ, my King. What a beautiful name it is. Nothing to this. What a beautiful